Hi, welcome to the Raising Expert podcast. This is a podcast for founders raising or planning to raise pre-seed equity investment. We provide tips and advice on attracting investment from the right investors. You can listen to interviews with entrepreneurs sharing their investment secrets and experts giving their advice and tips. My name is Finlay Kerr. Thanks for joining me. And now, on with the show. Hi there, Benji. Welcome to Raising Expert. Thanks for coming along.
Thanks, Finlay. Nice to be doing this.
So, listen, I think everyone kind of knows me, so I'm not going to bore them with yet another introduction about myself. But since you're a new face and voice, and I know you've got a really interesting background, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself first?
I guess the reason that we made our introduction and the work I do that's most relevant to this is that I run a company called Growth Maps that does... we do financial forecasting. We build financial models mostly for companies that are looking to raise investment. We also, it expands out a little bit further. At the moment, we're doing some stuff for a few investors who are looking at companies, and they've got a young founder who is running something from home. They're looking to expand it, and the investor wants to know what the numbers or what the projections can look like. Does this business have the potential to make money? So, you know, we help them, and really it's working in like Excel or Google Sheets to do modeling. But how I found myself doing that is having studied economics at university, you know, 15 years ago or something, I left and then went and worked at an investment bank. And at the time I was already planning to join the army. I'd signed up to the army when I was about 16 years old on a scholarship. So they'd given me money at university, and I'd had to do the officer training corps, sort of like the CCF at university. And I knew that I was going to join the army straight after university, but I was studying economics, and lots of people were trying to join investment banks or the banking sector. And I came to it quite late because I knew I was joining the army. But I think is the competitive part of me thought that I like all these people going off to get these internships and graduate schemes, and I wanted to get one to kind of show myself the reason I was joining the army was purely bad of choice. That I had the option to go and get the best paid job any graduate could get, but actually I was joining the army purely because I wanted to. And also it just looked like a fun experience and a nice way to take the degree I'd done and go and do something with it. So I did. I did a summer internship. The efforts I had to go through to get it were absolutely substantial. I think I applied to 19 investment banks and I only got one offer, but I only needed one offer. So I went and spent the summer at Barclays Capital. I think I got paid £11,000 for 10 weeks of swanning around Canary Wharf, you know, in a suit, suddenly going out for drinks with friends, having been a student for 3 years with money like I'd never seen before. And I was learning great stuff. And amongst the stuff I was learning on that internship was stuff about how to value companies, how to do discounted cash flows, how to do projections. I was in the M&A team for a bit, and we had a load of training there. So I learned the basics of it. And then I went off and spent 6 years in the army. And I guess the only thing that I did there, I did all sorts of fun stuff there. But the only thing I did there that's relevant to what I do now is we spend an enormous amount of time planning and learning how to plan, learning how to problem solve, not learning how to problem solve military specific problems, learning how to problem solve and a framework for solving any kind of problem. What do I need to think about? What's the timeline? What resources do I need? How do these things tie in together? What are the different options I have available to me? What are the pros and cons of each option? How do I plan to the smallest detail? So even if it's something as simple as we're going to drive our car to go on holiday, we're going to go here, we need to have this equipment in the car. If the car breaks down at this moment, we need to have thought, do we have the right equipment? Do we have sandwiches? Because we know there's no good service stations. And actually, to skip forward, that applies into what I'm doing now, because it's what I find interesting about helping founders map out their business is the output is financial statements, because the easy way to see is the business profitable. You know, how do they need to raise enough money to have enough cash? So we use the cash flow statement stuff. But actually, it's more of a planning tool. It's, we've got these different inputs. We want to do all these different things. How does it work? You know, if somebody's saying, I want my revenue to be £3 million in 3 years' time, in order to have that revenue, they need somebody in operations who's processing all those invoices. They need, in order to get that revenue 6 months before, they need however many salespeople out there doing deals. In order to have that many salespeople doing deals in that time, 3 months before, they've got to have a team of junior people on the phones getting the intros. And in order to have all these people, they have to have an office that size. So suddenly, you've got these targets of, I think my business can do this, but actually the detailed planning of how do you actually make that happen? How does that work? Means that you can suddenly strip back and go, oh, okay, actually, if I want to be at 3 million revenue in 3 years' time, I need to have an office in 6 months' time, which means that I need to raise more money than I thought, and I need to hit these targets. So that's kind of the military sway. And then I then left the army and set up my own startup, which is still going. We raised investment. It's a small tech company doing electronic greeting cards. And we raised seed round. And I would say we're still in the stage of trying to meet the objectives of that, what we're trying to achieve with that money before we can go and raise more money. So it's very small. It's about three of us who work on it. Everyone's part-time. We're up to 2,500 subscribers. So we're turning over about £7,000 a month. They pay £3.50 a month subscribers. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a break even. And what we're trying to do is work out how, in a cost efficient way, we can grow, which we haven't quite got to yet. So it's just slowly ticking. But yeah, we're really hoping that we can improve retention, bring down customer acquisition costs, and actually see it grow, much like any other subscription business, I think.
Now, that's brilliant. Listen, I really love that experience because, as you know, I work with a lot of founders, yes, when they're raising investment, but you know, like your experience, that often becomes an advisory piece across the business. We start off talking about raising investment, but there's other building blocks, fundamentals that are needed. And you have to be able to empathize with where they are, have a deep understanding of where they are. But as you say, look forward what's coming next. And it's a great explanation of military training and how that can translate into industry or into any setting. But I think it was a great advert for anyone thinking about employing someone or bringing in a consultant to say, wait a minute, someone who's been through British Army officer training is going to be fairly exceptional in that field. So I really like that. Listen, I know that we could spend a lot of time talking about the fun stuff that you mentioned. I bumped into quite a lot of military teams racing and stuff out in the Alps, but we'll leave that for maybe another podcast. Let's stick to financial modelling. Growth Maps is great. You know, it's a lovely little space, and I've enjoyed working with you on a couple of live client projects. And you know, I can totally back up those questions. You know, a lot of the time people employ a consultant and they want all the answers. It's like, no, actually, the questions are what's really important. And I've seen you ask those questions of people in that planning process. When are you getting an office? When are you employing the sales team? So, you know, I've seen that at play. But you mentioned this other service. So you've got a kind of two-sided service to investors as well. Can you tell us a little bit more about that side of the business?
Yeah. So it's recently started and it's happened organically. And it's something I'd really like to foster, because from a purely business side of stuff, it's much higher propensity for repeat business. And it's an interesting other side to the table. When you're doing it for the company, they're thinking, I need a suite of tools that are going to help me reassure potential investors. When you're doing it for the investor, It's the same work, but going the other way. You need to be, it's, you know, does this thing, how vulnerable? It's not how strong is this thing, it's how vulnerable is it? You know, where could be the hole? So let's not be super optimistic. And so I've only just started doing this work, and it's interesting. One of the interesting things about it as well is the budgets are much less. You know, if an investor is looking to put, say, £10,000 or £20,000 into a business, they don't want to spend so much on a financial model for just due diligence or perspective. Whereas if the company is looking to raise £500,000, for instance, it's going to be a whole host of investors. You know, one model is going to apply to all of them. So it's interesting from that side of things. So from my side, it's trying to work out more efficient ways that I can roll out models for investors. But the other thing I like about it is, well, the other potential I see in it, I don't know if it'll go anywhere, but is, you know, Growth Maps started as with me raising investment and needing, you know, and actually even before we raised investment, it started with us going, we've just introduced subscription for our e-cards business. You know, we know that we're paying this much per customer. Customers give us this, estimate retention. We know what our costs are. Does this business make money? How much money can it, how does it scale? So, and really I've been doing that for other founders, as I say, mostly when they're raising money, and it's a useful tool in that way. But actually lots of the founders, lots of people I chat to, they go, okay, a business model could be useful, maybe not. We've sort of got an idea of the numbers. Can you introduce us to investors? Do you know anyone? You know, and so far the answer has been no, not really. You know, our round was a very tight family and friends round and friends of friends, but it wasn't big institutional investors who want to invest in strangers. It was people who thought, oh, this could be a fun punt. But actually, you know, like any business, when people are saying to you, can you offer this service? And, you know, it would be valuable to us. And you're saying, no, you're thinking it would be great if I could offer this service. And so actually, I'm excited about this potential of working investors, because it would be great going forwards to be someone, you know, who can be the intermediary for the businesses. You can say, yes, I can interview you to investors, but you've got to go through this hurdle of having your business mapped out in a way that the investor can go, well, I can see the numbers. So instead of having to say, there's all these assumptions I can question, they can say, I can see the crux of your business is that your customer acquisition cost is never going to go above this as you scale. Let's hone into that, for instance.
Yeah, and that's, I think, why we work well together and see some potential for working together more with Growth Maps and Raising Expert. There's nice synergy. And you know, I like sitting in the middle. As being a broker's a bit of a dirty word at times, but you know, catalyst, and understanding both sides, and you've been there. I've worked on a lot of deals and seen both sides, and I think the most value you can bring is probably that understanding of investors and what they want to see, what they need to see, and bringing that in a tidy, easily to understand way to entrepreneurs, because they've at times, and I think it was a good point you said about, it's almost like the business model or your positioning of this. Well, listen, if you build up a good relationship with six investors, they're maybe doing 2, 4, 6 investments a year, therefore that's more frequent, rather than if you build up a relationship with entrepreneurs, some of them would be once only, and the frequency is maybe once every 18 months or maybe longer. So that makes a lot of sense. Build up a good relationship with investors. So yeah, I think that's a really nice offering. And it maybe then lets us just join up, and you know, there's an audience here. Let's hope that some investors go, actually, that'd be a great service for me, and let's hope that we can do that. Hopefully some investors listening and watching will be interested by that, and there's some quite experienced entrepreneurs, founders listening, but maybe if there's some who are just setting out, you spoke about what you thought financial modeling is or means, you know, so the product, the kind of very tangible product, is the financial statements. And what does that actually look like then, in your opinion?
So the models that, for instance, I put together, they probably sit on the like on the sort of complexity scale. They're probably three quarters towards complexity, and probably most businesses are using their own organic, much simpler model. And most businesses who've been successful and successfully raised and done really well were also probably using a much simpler model. You know, so it's certainly, it's not essential. And I guess what it hopefully does is it hopefully helps the businesses that there's a bracket in the middle that have the potential to succeed and have the potential to fail, which maybe is all businesses, but some may be closer to even scales. Hopefully it helps those ones avoid potential pitfalls or make decisions early they might not otherwise. And what they're really looking at in terms of what it really looks like is they're looking at a big complex model, but there's really just two fundamental aspects to it. And one is the assumptions or the inputs, the drivers. And that's how much your product costs, how much you think you're going to sell, what your costs are, how many employees you've got, when each employee starts, what their salary is, when it goes up, what your office costs are. You map out your costs. You set your cost of sale. You know, every time I sell a T-shirt, I get £25 in, but I've got to pay £20 out. Well, I don't pay the £20 out immediately. Actually, I pay the bill 3 months in advance. I've got to predict it. But then the VAT is this. So it's working out all those mechanics of how it works. It's working out the mechanics of your revenue. Well, the market is $1 million, and we reckon within 3 years, we're going to capture 5% of it. Okay, well, let's gradually build up to that. Or it's, I'm going to hire a sales guy. He's going to close one deal a month. 3 months' time, I'm going to hire a second sales guy. He's going to close one deal a month. But the first sales guy will have got better. He'll now be on two deals a month. Each deal is going to be this value. We're going to increase it. So there's many different ways for businesses to map out the revenue. And that is what ends up taking quite a lot of time on my side, because that's the bit that's often different. For instance, I'm doing a model for a company at the moment. It's going to sell products to consumers that they make in China, and say the average cost of a product is probably £50, and they're going to sell them for £150. You've got to order them from China. You pay 50% of the manufacturing cost up front, 50% on delivery. When you've then got to pay a shipping cost, you don't pay that till after the manufacturing started, and it's about 1 month later it actually ships. Once they arrive at the port in the UK, you've got to pay a 12% duty and an incidental cost per order. So all very niche stuff. And so what I've spent my time doing is working out how all this works. And then the outcome really is just years 1 to 5 P&L, what their revenue is each year, what their costs are, and what their profit is. And then below that is their cash flow. Because particularly for early stage businesses, actually the P&L, what matters far more is the cash flow. You know, they might be incredibly profitable on the P&L in year one, but they're spending an enormous amount of money on developing their tech stack, which doesn't appear on the P&L, and actually is going to put them £100,000 in the hole. So what's more useful to them is knowing bank balance years 1 to 5 on a graph. Is there a moment where it dips below zero? And if there is, then that adjusts what they need to raise now.
Yeah, no, that's brilliant. And I've obviously seen these in practice, and not simply the output, which is great, but that process. And there's two sides to this. Obviously, there's, if we're talking about the investment sort of process, is the founders, the founding team, the management team having that information and actually using it, understanding it, and you know, asking them to provide the input data is really valuable, isn't it? Alongside those questions, right? You know, the Chinese example, what are the shipping costs and the taxes and duties and all those sorts of things. You don't have those answers. Again, it's, you know, as you're asking the questions, it's like, well, wait a minute, let's get a genuine gross profit figure here. And so they do that. Now, listen, if they'd experienced business people and so on, that'll be second nature. But if it's the inventor or the designer, and you know, I know often those trainings are quite comprehensive, and they bring in the commercial side, but a lot of the people we deal with, I think, don't. So it's like, put them back in there. And don't be frightened of these numbers. You're the expert in here. And if you give them the framework to produce the outputs, that then here's the other side that the investors want to see. And you spoke about that, you know, perfectly. Yes, it's the profit and loss statement, but it's the cash flow. What is the burn rate? What are they spending on a month? How long can they last? What's that runway? And this model can produce that. And if they can learn to express that in kind of investing language, brilliant. But what they can say is, well, here's the link to the model. And the investors go, well, when do they run out of cash? Right? Okay, they're asking for 250, but they don't need 250, or they need 500. And what's the timing of that? The perfect world, if the managers, the founders have a really good insight of that and can talk investors through that other piece that you're talking about, brilliant. Because everyone takes it with a pinch of salt. You know, there's that big market that you'd spoke about, and we're going to capture 1%. Yeah, the investor's going to write, okay, maybe. And so what you could say is, well, what's the point in talking about those numbers if they're going to kind of discount it all anyway? But what I've got to kind of understand, I think, is over the years is they just want to see your skills and your ability and the fact that you will get down into the numbers and that you can give them, because they'll want to know, right, on a maybe a monthly or quarterly basis, good financial information, because that tells the whole story. You don't almost have to tell them all about the operational stuff because they can see it in the numbers. So another question to you, and I think these tools and your services around this are brilliant for early stage founders. A problem I find, or a challenge for so many people when it comes to forecasting, it's like it's so difficult for them. Why do you think that is?
Do you mean technically, or do you mean just trying to get the correct estimates?
Technical comes second. Actually, it's more of an emotional or psychological mental block almost when people are like, I don't know where to start, or I don't know how I can do that. I don't know how I can get to year two. You know, maybe pre-revenue. How do I get there?
Yeah, that's interesting. It's an interesting idea. I guess one of the things that makes it tricky is, like anything, if it's all new and you've got no experience of it, then knowing where to start, you feel like you're looking at something that's so complex. How could you possibly make a remotely accurate forecast? You've got to have a decent understanding of just the financials of your business to even get started. You've got to have some kind of measure of exactly what your business spends money on every month. What money comes in and what causes that money to come in, what things are related, you know, which is often things like the marketing spend, how that relates to the money that comes in form of revenue. Because the simplest way to make a model, or the simplest way that some people do, is they literally will take an export from zero or something of their P&L, all their line items, say you've got the last 12 months. And I mean, the simplest thing you can do is just copy and paste that into the next 12 months and then adjust things. Well, I know that my rent is going to go up, so I can make an adjustment on that. And then how are we going to do revenue? But then once you've actually done the items, it might make a bit more sense. You might be a fashion business with one shop online and you do your Christmas markets. Well, the Christmas markets, maybe they're going to do 20% better this year. You know, online, it feels a bit finger in the air. Maybe it's fair that we could increase it. We have got a new shoot coming up or something. So I guess actually by breaking it down into those things, you've got a better idea. But I think even at that level, I think it seems most businesses, it's very difficult. It's the forecasting revenue. It's very difficult for them. It's very difficult, even in this modern world, to really have a grip on what drives your revenue and what you can do to change it. There's so much randomness. Again, that example I was just describing, imagine you're a fashion business with your shop and you're online. Whether over the summer, how many of the Saturdays are sunny Saturdays will have an enormous impact on your revenue. What Facebook do to slightly change their algorithm is going to have a massive impact on your revenue next year. Google search have started, they've started passing on the inflation costs over the last 6 months, and that's having a massive impact on everybody who's affected by Google search. So I guess it's really, really difficult for people. And I guess not only is it difficult to work out what it's going to be next year, where we're talking about things going up 10 or 20%, but when you're trying to present, you know, investors don't get money back if you go up 10 or 20%. When you're trying to work out going up from times 50 over the next 5 years and actually work out how you're going to go up times 50, you know, because if you turn around and say, well, we're just going to spend 50 times on Google Ads, your acquisition cost is going to go up so much as it ramps up. That's not going to work like that. So suddenly you're talking about unknowns. Well, we've spoken to a marketing firm and they say they can get us this on TikTok and we've never done it before and we have absolutely no idea. And maybe we're going to expand into America because other companies are there, but it doesn't mean we're going to work. And suddenly you're thinking, God, you know, we're notching up unknowns here.
It is unknowns. And I think that's why a lot of people find it difficult. I'll put this to you in a second, that I think there might be a little bit of imposter syndrome for some people. That we were a little bit uncomfortable with unknowns in general. Taking you back to your economics training, you know, who would have thought that actually for real, the PESTEL analysis of a global pandemic and then a war in Europe would actually have impacted on your business plan. You know, you kind of thought that was theoretical, didn't you? When you were doing that, yeah, pandemic, yeah, we know that happened sometime last century and wars in Europe, yeah, that's done, that's last century. So those big macro things are really hard to predict. The imposter syndrome, I'm worried if some people, and this will come down to personality, because some people overcook it, don't they? Say, right, we're going to be turning over 100 million, 70 million profit in year two and get it that way. And some other people who are maybe very early stage have got, you know, a small or modest business just now with genuine potential, but don't want to talk about 100 million because that seems like, well, they could never do that. But actually, they really do have the potential. So, you know, it's just something that I'm starting to think about. And in my sort of coaching, you know, if you put your coach's head on a little bit, you know, and try to use that and nurture people up to that. So I don't know if you think that there's anything in either of those thoughts.
Yeah, I guess so. I'm sure there's imposter syndrome. And I think a part of it is that most businesses fail. And most people who, as from my experience, most of the people I know set up businesses are very naive. They've often never done one before. And including the ones that succeed were set up often by people I know who were naive and didn't know. And maybe it's because people who've had more experience of this game know that the chances of success are probably less than 50%, but obviously you can back yourself, that you're going to go down a road, but you're probably going to end up throwing a decent portion of yours and all your family and friends' life savings into, and a lot of stress that might lead to, you know, decline and all sorts of awful stuff. But when you're naive, you just got an idea and you're like the people we've spoken about who sometimes have no experience in the numbers or anything. They just know they've got an idea, they absolutely believe in it. And actually, that naivety is probably the strongest thing they have, because they're going to face all sorts of problems. And most of these problems can be solved, and people have solved them. How do I start TikTok advertising? You know, you Google search it, and you find that millions of people have written articles and videos on it. And starting a business or getting anything going is just a series of steps like that. How do I hire someone who's experienced? Well, maybe you phone your friend who's done it, or speak to someone else who's done it, or speak to a recruiter and they'll advise you. You know, they're all solvable problems. But I guess what that ties back into is it does mean that when you start to say to them, okay, how do you scale this thing? How are you going to do this? How are we going to build a model? Suddenly it's all, God, I've got no idea.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, kind of cynical plug, that's why people maybe hire consultants. So, you know, they come to you and go, Benji, can you help? And that's when, you know, the kind of value exchange happens. And maybe we've not spoken enough about the relationship with angel investors, let's say angel investors, in that they can bring quite a lot of these skills and experience to the business. Now, obviously, you've got to convince them to invest by presenting, you know, good numbers and a good plan and you know, the chemistry and all those kind of softer things. But actually, they may be able to provide either by an introduction to their accountant or their interim FD that they've maybe used before. But there's a good chance they've grown businesses and they've presented numbers to boards and shareholders and stuff like that. So they can bring a lot of that. And depending on what your engagement with investors is, you know, you can start to kind of nurture that and you both get a feel to go, you know what, this woman or this man can actually bring a lot and we're going to be able to work together, you know, as partners. So that's maybe something for people to think about as well. I don't think you can kind of go, oh, I know nothing, please could you come in and be the FD? It's not that, but yeah, there's some element.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah. You know, for instance, one of the things that we found very difficult being the e-cards business is that the e-cards mm-hmm. market is very, very small. It's extremely profitable for a couple of organizations in there. There's probably only about 10 companies worldwide, really, that you could, that are really doing it properly. And what it's meant for us is that none of our investors have any experience of that market. It's very, and that sets us up to not reap the benefits that other people are. For instance, on the flip side, two friends of mine own a fashion business and they're lead investors are extremely experienced in the fashion world. They've done a full career in the fashion world. Now they've got a bit of spare money and it's great fun for them. They're invested in the young business in the future. The guys lap up their advice. They can introduce them to other people. They've got different experiences and it's hugely beneficial. And yes, unfortunately, it's something that we've not managed to capitalize on.
No, that's interesting. It's more typical that the investor with industry experience, and I have found it hard at times if there's something very niche or very new to bring investors in because they don't know it. But there's obvious benefits there if there's a new market and not much competition and stuff. So listen, there's another conversation here about the ideal investor, maybe, and we can you know, drill down into some of your experience. I think that would be really interesting. I'm going to throw a slightly different question, but it's on everyone's lips just now. We're talking about artificial intelligence. So I know, you know, people running podcasts and so on are using artificial intelligence. Asking them, you know, what questions should I ask on a podcast about financial modeling, or what topic should I have on my podcast? Do you think, you know, based on everything you've told us there, is there space for AI and financial modeling? I guess, you know, you could argue that it's already there in many cases. What do you think?
I think there is space for technology or much better technology in general, let alone it being artificial intelligence. For instance, like arguably the way I work is already quite outdated. You know, building a financial model using Excel or Google Sheets with an enormous amount of, it's very easy to picture, and there are companies out there who do it, how you could automate what I'm doing and build a system so that, you know, okay, you start with a company, this company is drop down, this type of business, bam, financial model is ready, you just put the inputs in. And as I say, those things are out there, and that wouldn't even need to be AI. But going forwards, if you were to not only build more advanced software in that way, that also did things like integrated their accounts and actuals as you go forwards, but actually did artificial stuff like the stuff that we've been talking about. So to use a couple of examples we've just spoken about and what AI could do for them, how is my customer acquisition cost going to scale as my business scales? I'm sure there's loads of stuff on the internet that ChatGPT has chewed through that has articles on this, and that would, you could then forecast that into it. Give me an optimistic scenario, pessimistic. Give me the Netflix scenario. And So I think there's loads of scope for it. Loads of scope. Really interesting. Whether or not I can capture it or add value to what I'm doing. It feels at the moment such a delta between how basic what I'm doing is really and that. But then I'm relatively new to doing it at scale and doing it full time. So maybe I'm certainly open to the idea of it. Probably like you find, I think AI and automating more of it throws up an interesting thing, because one of the things I like about what I do within the consulting bracket is that it's so transactional. I like they get a deliverable product. I like the fact that there couldn't be an accusation of, you know, why are we going to pay you this money to come in and give wishy-washy advice? We know our own business better, because I can say, I'm not coming in to give you any advice or anything. I'm just going to take all the stuff you know and produce a financial model, and there's a deliverable there. But like you were saying, it does become quite a human thing, because lots of the founders are actually quite new and they don't know, you know, I don't know, what do you think is a reasonable thing? Well, does that look right? Or I don't know, what should this be? Well, I hadn't thought about that. Maybe we should do this. You know, I've got to see an investor next week. What should I say? Do you think I should be optimistic or pessimistic? Or, you know, I'd have no experience of financial statements. I've spent 20 years honing my knowledge of a particular industry, and now I've got a startup, but I've never done the financials. Okay, well, you know, let's talk through the balance sheet, and let me explain so you can explain. And AI is probably not going to help with those sorts of things. So it's interesting.
Yeah. So listen, when I invite you back next time, I think it's going to be you and not your robotic assistant that turns up 5 years down the line. Who's to say, you know, we might just send some avatar or something to present ourselves and maybe do a good job.
Maybe I'll have a co-founder. Maybe by then I'll have a business partner or co-founder who is an AI, and I'll sort of be sitting here and you'll see him sort of sitting on my digital shoulder, and we'll be sparring off each other.
There we go. There's a little look into the future. Listen, Benji, it's been really nice talking to you. Thank you very much. I'll tag on, you know, your LinkedIn profile and how to find growth maps and so on top and tail of this podcast. But all the best with that.
Thanks,
in the future. And we'll have you back to talk to us again soon. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, nice one. Cheers, Finley.